You're listening to 66.6 FM, Radio TOVH, The Flush.
Oh yeah, you're listening to the Toilet of Hell radio show. I'm Joe Thrashenkill, and with me I've got my my good friend, 365 Days of Horror, or as we also sometimes call him, Jordan. Jordan, how are you?
I am slowly melting to death under the heat dome.
Yeah, man, I think that's kind of like the story of everybody on a long enough timeline. What's it up to in the Northeast now, like a brisk 82 or so?
90s, but it's one of those, it's 90, but it feels like it's 100. And at that point, just like, whatever, it doesn't matter, I just feel gross.
Yeah, man, it's around this part of the summer that I just stop bathing, because, I mean, what's the point? You're sweating constantly. I'm just gonna roll around in filth until, well, October, probably.
Sure about that?
I mean, who's gonna complain, right? We got a special guest on this week's episode. This is a voice that might be familiar to you if you are one of those Toilet of Hell radio show completists, if you're that kind of freak. We got our buddy Stockhausen, who you might recognize as an occasional contributor to the Toilet of Hell as a writer, and also a musician for a little band called Discordia. Josh, nice. How you doing today?
Pretty good, man. Pretty good. Also, suffering under the sweat dome in Oklahoma. It's like, I mean, upper 90s, easy. Humidity is way worse, of course, and generally terrible. And I just ran around outside playing soccer for a long, long time, so that was great.
Yeah, I barely have the energy to, like, walk my dogs in the heat, so I'm not sure how you're going to run around for an hour.
Hour and a half.
Oh.
is it possible to boomer sooner in that type of weather?
The Oklahomans will find a way. They are a resilient people for a very limited category of things, but they will find a way for boomer soonering.
Despite living, you know, in the near vicinity of Oklahoma all of my life, I guess I'm not super familiar with Oklahoma activities. I mean, I know that you guys enjoy drinking 3.2% ABV beer. What
else? That's been changed for a while now.
Really?
Yeah, I think it was whenever I was on the podcast last, like 2016 or something like that. I think right after that, our laws changed, and you can buy actual beer now.
Huh?
And breweries can sell you their beer in person.
It's crazy.
That used to not be a thing, but
never counted on.
Other than that,
never counted on Oklahoma going all progressive.
Yeah, it's weird, right?
So previously, did like breweries just make beer and leave it on the side of the road, and you would just leave a $10 bill underneath the rock?
Pretty basically, yeah. But what they used to do was basically breweries couldn't have a tap room, like you would, or they could, but the only thing they were allowed to sell in the tap room was this 3.2 water. And but breweries started finding their way around that by literally building a tap room in their brewery, calling it a different business, making the beer on one side of the door, shipping it to the distributor, and it comes right back to their facility and they sell it in their tap room.
Just it drive was, around the block for yeah. a couple of minutes and come back.
Well, the tiers system was so nuts that I think, and I don't know the details of it, but we would have like a one more middle person in an organization than any other state. So like those people had to go through a certain process, so they couldn't just drive around the block, and so dumb. But that all changed, and now you can drink good beer easier.
I think,
and gas stations can sell it now too.
That's crazy. They couldn't sell them before.
Yeah. Whenever I think back about that, I was like, how did I live?
Well, I mean, now you can get to go mixed drinks, you know, pretty much anywhere here in Austin, and you know, get booze delivered to your house and all kinds of cool things like that. So it's kind of nice that like as like the Republic kind of crumbles, that they've relaxed the bureaucracy on how you can get drunk.
That is one thing that, yeah, we all needed as a country. And despite we needing several other things, a lot more, at least we did get that one.
You know,
I think they stopped doing the like the delivery and to-go drinks, to-go mixed drinks here. I mean, you can still get to-go, you know, beer, I think, from most places, but yeah, the delivery was awesome.
Yeah, it's I don't know. I talk about this all the time, but if you've ever been to New Orleans, I mean, you can walk up to a window where they will give you a drink and they send you on your way and nobody cares because it's advanced. It's an advanced society. Yeah.
And you can do that at like 6 a.m.
Because it's nobody's business but you and your sponsor.
Right. But as far as other activities that Oklahomans do, that's it pretty much.
Go to dangerous political rallies where you breathe and cough on each other.
Well, Oklahomans also love doing the counter protesting to good rallies and showing up with their Trump capes and just every single gun they could find strapped to them and yelling about their rights and freedoms and how they didn't steal anything, so whatever.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I guess that might be fairly standard across the states now as well.
That's true, yeah. They're all coming out.
But apparently you got soccer in Oklahoma. That's the thing you guys are real well known for.
Totally. Yeah, it's just some adult league where it's a funny mix of, like, guys like me. I'm 32. I'm not, you know, old, but I'm not, you know, 18 and running 50 miles every day. So, but you'll get kids like that. They're just fresh out of high school and they zip around all the old guys. And then guys like me, they're like, man, can you slow down?
This is a rec league, sir. Can you calm down? Don't embarrass me in front of my children. Yeah. I guess you got metal there too.
Not really. Really bad metal.
I think one of the most entertaining things that you do on a regular basis is when Discordia gets the opportunity to tour around the country, you regale us with tales of the bands that you play with.
Oh, dude. I lose track of half of them. I probably have like 50 more of those hilarious horror stories in my head that are just lost to time now, but one of our favorites was always in Texas, so we can't even claim that one. Although it was Amarillo, so that's...
That doesn't count.
I don't know who claims Amarillo.
Was this band one of the mask tier bands?
Oh, yes, dude. Absolutely. They had this... this weird new metal rap mashup thing. I mean, that's kind of all new metal, but they had times they leaned heavily into that. And I think my favorite time we played with them was when they played a song that was clearly a diss track.
To whom?
To their former manager. Because number one, bands like that need a manager.
Absolutely.
And number two, when there's a harsh breakup and it really rocks the local nu metal scene, you've like priority number one is get out that diss track before your manager can... I don't know. But
ruin your reputation.
Yeah, exactly. Right. Yeah, your sterling reputation. But I remember a line of lyrics from that song aimed at their former manager. A lot of violence and bad things. But then also, you don't even know the difference between hard rock and heavy metal.
Damn.
That was a line in that song. And I was like, oh, they threw down.
That's harsh.
They just
fuck.
Threw down. And I wasn't, I, you know, I don't keep up with them, so I don't know if there was a sweet diss track fired back at them.
Well, I mean,
I don't know, man.
I hope that guy, like, took music lessons, like, learned theory, just to clap back.
He took record scratching records, and he's going to put out his own stuff on Pure Volume in a couple months.
It's going to be all over Reverb Nation, man.
Man, I saw this this fucking leech put up a tweet the other day. This guy, Jay McClain, who is an A&R/management guy. I figured that I would share this with you and two independent musicians here with me. Mm-hmm. I wanted to get your thoughts on it real quick, if y'all don't mind. Jay McClain here has to say, artists, please stop releasing projects with no real fan base. The internet does not want to listen to an artist they've never heard before for 30 minutes straight. Single, 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 singles. Now, what are your thoughts there, fellas? You independent musicians, ye?
I'll turn this one over to Jordan. Go ahead.
I'm a little confused. Does he just want music that already exists and is popular from the start?
That seems to be what I'm reading out of it. If you don't have an existing fan base, you should probably, I don't know, conjure a fan base with no material.
And then just instead put out one song every 4 to 5 months, because that's better for some reason. Huh. I mean, I have a friend that's in like a pop rock band, and that's what they have done for years, is they just put out a single and like that's it. And I can't see that being a successful business model without something else to back it up, whether it's touring or a full length album. Because otherwise you're just stringing people along for sometimes years.
So that is the worst.
Does he like tour? Does he have a record?
They were actually on a major label and like put out a record, and then, you know, the label dropped them because they didn't sell 500,000 records. And it was just like, well, we got to put out something. So they put out one song and then put out like a video to go with it. And it just kept, it's like still going from there. I don't think anything else has come out like majorly for them since.
That's one of my favorite moves, is you release a video for your single 6 months after you release the single. Just, you know, dude, squeezing content from a stone.
Yeah, I mean, there's always this talk about how the album format wasn't going to stick around once streaming services really hit. And I just, every time I see a band do something like that, I mean, like, if I see a single coming out, I was like, cool, if it's for an album. And if it's not, I will not even, I don't know, maybe that's just me, but.
I mean, you forget about it. You listen to it, and maybe you'll like it, maybe you'll save it on Spotify, but if there's nothing else to go on, then it's just a song amongst your thousands of other songs that you already have.
And you clearly, and just,
it's not like, as a fan, you can't give them more of your money. I mean, are you going to go see a band that you know one song of? Probably not.
But if you catch the video 6 months later, you're hooked, baby.
You got to have the lyric video, and then you got to have the official video, and then you have to have the 360-degree visualizer to go
home. Oh, hell yeah. You got to have the visualizer.
Man. And the club remix, the acoustic version. Remember when singles used to have that?
Yeah, if you bought the single, you know, the first song on it would be the thing you wanted to hear, and the other one was maybe a different song, and the third one was definitely, like, booty bass remix.
Or even better, you had the radio edit and then the uncensored.
Hell yeah.
And I loved when they did that for songs that were already pretty electronic based. So it was like, remix! And some electronic beats that were already there.
I still don't understand how electronic music operates. So as far as I'm concerned, it's an entirely new song. But
that's fair.
It strikes me like this guy is giving perhaps really shitty advice for artists, but really good advice if you're a manager or a PR guy or somebody that makes money off of artists doing things.
Yeah, I mean, you shouldn't like contact your local one-man black metal project with no fans and be like, I want to be your artist and all, you know, or sorry, I want to be your manager or whatever. So yeah, I guess it's good advice for manager, but I don't know how you would just magically have fans before you do stuff.
I don't know. I guess.
And as a person in a band that doesn't have fans that's been doing it for like 10 years anyway, I'm offended.
I guess.
And he would suggest that.
I've never been much a musician. I've kind of given up on trying to make music, but I do want to find myself in a situation where I can manage a new metal band out of Amarillo, Texas.
Oh, dude, I have the band for you. You would not believe this. But first, Joe, do you know the difference between hard rock and heavy metal?
I mean, it's kind of like pornography, right? Like I can't describe it, but I can let you know when I see it.
Sweet, yeah, you're the guy then. I'll put you in touch. But yeah, that guy's comments also kind of remind me of, you know, when we were getting ready to tour, before we ever did tours, and even as we were doing, you know, in our first few, we'd always read these things where, like, they'd say, do not tour unless you can guarantee that you'll pull 50 people in a city.
I've heard that before as well.
Yeah. And I get it. If you're going to be smart and if your goal is to make money, then, you know, I guess that's kind of good advice. But how do you do that with never having been there before? And if your music itself is huge, then, you know, that can help. But man, like, no, just
The same people that say that also say, like, you should have a street team in 2020.
Oh, God.
Actually right. Having strangers go out and hand out, like, your album and stickers outside shows.
Guys, can I confess something to you?
Yeah.
All right. It was 2001 or two.
Was it Papa Roach? Were you on the Papa Roach street team?
No, man. Even better or worse. I don't know. You'll tell me. I was on the Demon Hunter street team.
Holy nice. Shit.
Which meant I, like, printed off a thing on my computer. I probably had my mom do it at her work. Like, some thing about an album, and I put up one in my middle school or high school, whatever grade I was in, on the wall, and then a teacher promptly threw it away. And that was the end of my street team activities. That was diehard.
I recall people doing street teams back in the day where they would post up at, like, the mall and, like, harass children to go catch a show that night that they couldn't possibly go to. So
it's your audience, man. Yeah,
I can't believe that's still a thing. All of this conventional advice around how you need to promote and tour just reminds me of, like, I don't know, economics advice from, like, Dave Ramsey or something like that. It's like, don't buy a new car unless you have $1 million in the bank. It's like, who the fuck is ever going to have $1 million in the bank? You're never getting a car, bro.
Yeah. Like, first things first, save so that if you died right now, everyone you know would have $100,000 from you. Then you can buy a coffee.
Yeah. It's so you want to do this thing, right? Well, here's the thing. You can't, because I've given you this impossible barrier.
Right? Now have fun.
Now, when you've gone out for the first time to a city, do you have repeat customers on your second visit?
Yeah, we'd always do. Like, that was a thing we always tried to balance. If we went on a tour, we would try to, you know, plan the route so that we would have a city we've been to before on our previous, because the first tour was just, I mean, we played for like four people and everything sucked and it was just a good time. It's all it was. But, you know, like, we'd try to be professional and play well and all that. And we'd always, you know, at all of our shows in a new city, we'd always have people saying, hey, you guys are great. Next time you come through, I'll make sure it's, you know, we'll make it happen much better than this time. So we'd always have that. And then, like, between those stops, we try and put one or two new cities. And man, it also just so much depends on where you are. Like, we've gone to Boston. The very first time we went to Boston, the venue sold out. And, like, no one knew who we were. It was a good night, and you just get those. And then sometimes we will go to places that we've had awesome success at in years past, and there's, you know, three people there. I mean, just go out and do it if you can. Don't if you can't.
I guess your approach to all of this, I think, is really, it's just a really great and healthy way of going about this, and that your tours are kind of like your vacation, and you also, like, do brewery tastings along the way, because that's what you and your bandmates enjoy.
That's pretty much why we are in a band, yeah. So we can go to breweries.
And
our music is terrible, and I don't care about any of it, but we can go to some sweet breweries.
Well, it seems like you found a way to balance all of the things that you enjoy and do it in a way that works for you, even if it's not necessary, if you're not, you know, breaking the Billboard 200.
Yeah, and, you know, I would never pretend that our situation is like what everyone can do, because, you know, we're lucky. Like, we all have full-time jobs at home that have a window of the year where we can get out and tour. So, you know, we're not, like, there are legit bands out there that, like, if they don't get paid, they don't eat. And that's, you know, we're fortunate that we haven't really been in that situation. So we're super lucky. I'm not going to claim that we're doing it the right way and everyone else is wrong. It's just we're lucky we made it work, and you know, we're going to have fun.
I guess just as a spreadsheet farmer, I think that your style of going about this is aspirational.
It is nice, yeah. You want to do our books?
Yeah. I can.
Sweet, man.
I can pivot table that bitch like nobody's business.
I'm gonna assume that's a thing that you just said.
Yeah, that's it. No,
it is because I have to do that for my job too.
Sweet pivot tables, man.
Yeah, I definitely had a moment where I was doing a pivot table and I said to myself, I cannot live the rest of my life like this. So that's why I'm in school right now.
Yeah.
I got an upset puppy back there. So I've heard that you might have some new things in the works. What's going on with the Discordia camp?
Yeah, we're actually this weekend, we will be going into the studio to track drums for a new full length. It's gonna be cool. I guess that's kind of it. It's a new full length that we're gonna track drums this weekend.
So you have all your material written. You're not gonna spend 3 months in the studio, you know, banging out ideas.
God,
right?
I cannot fathom bands that do that. And like our we've got this weird, well, not weird relationship, but like we just. A guy that's done some album work before us has also done a lot of engineering work for Linkin Park in the past.
Huh.
Weird link. I have no idea how we landed that in the first place, but awesome dude, like the coolest guy ever, and he just happened to also do a ton of Linkin Park. I think he engineered all of their stuff, actually. Or at least like he was in the booth for... Anyway, he would talk about how they would come into the studio with half of a song written, spend hundreds of thousands of dollars on studio time, and like, you know, crank out these Linkin Park songs that are Linkin Park songs, and it blows my mind.
That's weird label pressure doing that too.
Yeah,
I mean,
I'm sure
the label gets paid either way. Like they can go ahead and bill those hours; they'll get it back from your sales if you're Linkin Park. But that has always seemed like the height of hedonism to me in terms of music. It's not like, you know, ruining a hotel room or whatever. It's like just not writing anything until you actually have to be on the clock in the fucking studio.
That would I would not be able to sleep, man. Like, and it's also I think just part of our style of music with you know being a bit more complex and has to sort of be planned out and really ironed out well ahead of time. Like, I mean there are plenty of extreme metal bands out there that just have that kind of freedom that they can pull that off with. But everything's done and written. We've got to finish up some lyrics. But it's cool, man. We had practice today and played through all the whole album, and drummer is ready to go. He's on fire, and he'll be, I think he's planning on doing the whole album in like 2.5 days.
Wow.
He'll probably get done early too. That's just how he is. He'll knock it out and kill it. But it's cool, man. 9 songs. We've always found that we've worked a little bit better if we have kind of a thematic thing. Like our last EP with these two long partner tracks that had a set lyrical theme, and then in the previous album we had this one group of songs on there that had this set theme to it. So we kind of made that the thing where we've got these three little mini suites of 3 songs each for the new album, and we found that just helps the writing process and helps the lyrical process too, for sure, because it's really important that I get out these really smart, very highly polished, just bastions of the English language that I can growl incomprehensibly and zero people will care.
That's an interesting point about the kind of music we generally listen to. It's, I don't know if I've ever been able to pick out a lyric in my life from like anybody doing any kind of guttural, so...
Yeah.
Is it mostly just writing for the lyric sheet?
Pretty much. I mean, I like the lyrics we come up with, and we all, you know, it feels good to do it well, but when I really think about it, it's like, man, no one cares. No one's going to look this up. No one's going to go to darklyrics.com and search for Discordia. If they do, they'll spell our name wrong and it won't matter. Whatever.
So is your drummer going to have to wear like a face mask in the studio?
Actually, I don't know. I mean, I guess legally he would kind of have to, because it's in Oklahoma City, and we just had a mask mandate that for Oklahoma City. And I loved reading the comment section of that announcement.
Sorry about your tyranny, bro.
Right. But I don't know. I don't think so. So I think legally probably, but for all the FBI people listening in right now, we're totally going to wear a mask.
This has been a pretty chill one for the FBI guy, I think.
Yeah.
Are you going to have any?
He's there, we know.
Are you going to have any flute on this one?
Yeah, that's a thing we need to write too. Thanks for reminding me. yeah, like we kind of got the structure of all the songs down. Now we've got a few clean sections that we're going to for sure expand on and add some. We'll probably add some cool percussion instruments and some flute sections. I would love to someday be able to do some flute while we do some, you know, actual heavy parts and not just do it in a clean section. But, I mean, we're a three piece and I would not be able to play bass doing that, obviously, and have to get a flute pedal board. And I don't know if I want to be the guy with a flute pedal board.
I would want to be that guy.
All right, you're in, man.
Yeah, I can press the buttons. What is the giant instrument that you play that it looks like a xylophone to me because I don't know shit about anything?
Marimba. That is my favorite instrument of all time.
I mean, I've seen videos of you tearing it up on the marimba. Is there any place in extreme metal for the marimba, do you think?
Absolutely, man. Like, I mean, it's a... I don't know. Like, there's so much percussion that could, I think, have a lot of, you know, contribute to a lot of really weird noises and just stuff kind of outside the mold that doesn't get exploited enough or doesn't get used enough. And I think marimba and vibraphone particularly, I think could just be used a lot. But the thing is, they're gigantic. They're super expensive. And you can't, unless you got a whole crew, you can't take one on tour. And unless you have like a dedicated marimba guy in the band, I mean, I don't know who, like, I don't know. Although for any bands out there, I will be your dedicated marimba guy if you're interested.
There's a lot of tech guitar people out there that like to make their own pedals, build their own guitars. Do you think it would be possible to build some sort of scaled down, even electronic version of that instrument for you to use more easily?
Oh yeah, you could. I mean, there's plenty of like they have electronic keyboards, like synthesizer, but like an electronic mallet instrument, basically, where it is looks like a marimba, way smaller, and has basically rubber pads for all the keys, and those are super cool. Like I've seen I want to say like Snarky Puppy has a guy that does a lot of that stuff. And then what's that other band that some of those people are in?
Motograder.
Yeah, definitely Motograder. Grace Note? Ghost Note. Yeah. Some Snarky Puppy guys are in that. And like, I know they use that kind of stuff a lot. And I mean, they're very far from extreme metal, obviously. But yeah. Oh, but on that note, too, have you guys heard the new Behold the Octopus album?
I have not heard it yet.
Man. Speaking of percussion being used in inventive ways, like basically for that album, they just got rid of their drum set and had a guy just do, had the drummer, the percussionist do everything on this setup of like kind of avant-garde 20th century classical percussion setup, whereas like brake drums, wood blocks, and like a lot of kind of weird, like kind of basically junk instruments, like junk percussion. And I mean, it's the kind of thing that I think if someone who wasn't really into that would hear it and be like, this is awful, turn this off right now. But at the, like, I love that kind of stuff. And I think that was a really cool use of percussion that just hasn't been done so much, but, that stuff's also way easier to get in the studio and tour with and not a gigantic $20,000 marimba.
I think that, you know, if Motley Crue could have like a rotating cage for Tommy Lee to play drums, like there is, we have the technology, we can make this happen.
Rotating, upside down, spinning platform for marimba.
Absolutely.
I would love to see that.
I think that, you know, one of the things that you do, and like, you know, you were mentioning the old Arctopus, and that the drummer there is the guy from PsyOffice, right?
I think so. Yeah, the guy right now. They've gone through a couple guys, and I know it's not Weasel Walter anymore.
No, it's not. It's not our beloved Weasel. But I think the thing is that, like, it's really common to find dudes in metal bands that really know the guitar back and forth. Like, they, you know, go to sleep doing, you know, sweep picking exercises or whatever. But I think it's a much rarer thing to find guys that have a real command of an instrument that is not a guitar.
Yeah. Yeah, and like, you know, it's the, that kind of stuff, the outside of the drum set percussion world is not, I mean, unless you were in band in high school and then majored in music in college for percussion, you're just not going to do that. It's not something you can kind of get into later with how inaccessible some of the instruments are. So yeah, I don't really ever see it getting a lot of traction in the metal world. I'd love to see it, but yeah, it's, if you've got a drummer in a metal band who's really good at drums, chances are that's it. Like, that's what that drummer does. Or, you know, like you said, the guitar player is just, they're really good at guitar, but, you know, what else do?
Yeah, you got to do something else, bro. Well, yeah. For you, you were in band, right?
Oh, yeah.
And you got yourself a music degree, right?
I got a couple of them.
Couple of them?
A couple of them, yeah.
What's I didn't realize you could do more than one.
Yeah, I did an undergrad in music education and then a master's in percussion performance. And
what does your dissertation look like for PhD in drums?
A hammer, bro. And a contact mic.
Yes, art, bro. But for my master's, I didn't have to do a thesis because for a performance degree, I had to, like, my thesis was my final recital. I just played some stupid hard ass music and had to practice, you know, inhuman amount of hours for it. So that was my, you know, performative thesis, I guess you would say. But if you do a doctorate, you do have to do a dissertation, and, you know, you just pick some super nerdy music percussion thing and write 150 pages about it.
I guess, how is your recital judged? Do you have, like, some guys with, you know, patches on their sport jackets and just with a clipboard, like, that sounds right, or that feels a little off?
Yeah, I mean, you'll have, like, I think I had to do, like, a committee. Well, I guess you do have, like, this, you know, you got a final exam along, like, not the same time as your recital, but you have to do, like, an oral comprehensive exam and, you know, answer questions that they ask to you on that day. And I think your committee also comes to your recital. And, cause you'll also, I mean, like, your teacher, who, you know, for me, was the director of percussion at the school I was going to. He was my teacher all through my master's degree. He was at my recital and judging it to, you know, pass or not. And since he was my teacher, he knows the music really well and knows if I did something right or wrong. And, you know, like, to be honest, you've got to really work hard to blow it. Like,
that was my next question. I wanted to know if, yeah, like, any of your friends just, like, drank all night the night before and just were flubbing the notes.
Accidentally exposed their genitals, things like that.
Just took a dump on stage and just, yeah.
Ta-da!
It's G.G. Allen getting his master's in performance art.
Dr. Allen.
Although I bet there are some, like, really contemporary conservatories out there where, like, that might be really highly rewarded. But I've never known anyone that's not passed their recital. I've known plenty of people that sucked at their recital. not to say mine was amazing, but yeah, you'd have to really blow it to like just not show up, basically, to not pass.
This is a challenge for our listeners. If you or anybody you know has failed their final recital, please write in and let us know. Tell us.
I want to see a video too.
Yeah, if you have that, I would love to see that too.
Yeah.
Not to make fun of you, I want to know what goes into this.
Yeah, man, I had a scare in my recital though. I had to I played this one piece that was for marimba, and then in front of the marimba I had this giant tray of junk percussion. So it was like pots and pans, weird old trashy cymbals, woodblock, just random metal things, and I had to like reach over the marimba and play that as I'm also doing marimba, and then it also all went with a digital audio track, and so I had to have headphones on as I'm playing and listen to the audio track, play to it, and it was just nuts. That piece was so cool, but it kicked my butt. But and like the marimba is like 12 feet wide, it's big, and there's times in the piece where you just gotta like basically jump from one end to the other to keep up with it. And on my recital, I stepped on the headphone cord behind me, had to do my big sort of like jump to get down the other side, and tore out the connector, and it had to like stop and put my headphones back on and recover, and it was awful, but
brutal.
But I made it.
Brutal. But I guess all of this is to say you're fairly accomplished with music then.
Possibly.
Do you use that outside of Discordia?
Yes. My job is as a band teacher, 6th through 12th grade. I work at one middle school where I teach all percussion classes and a flute class, and sort of like assistant direct the 7th and 8th grade bands. And then at the high school, I handle all the percussion aspects, and then do like basically assistant full band directing as well. But mainly at the high school, I work with like just the whole percussion section and oversee all that.
So you teach America's youth in the ways of music then, right?
I sure do.
I don't know if you heard about this, but there was like this weird thing that like made kids like finish school early in the last year.
Are you kidding me?
Yeah, man. It's
is that why no one was there? I went for like 2 months.
I kept showing up.
Yeah. It's like, where is everyone?
Were you able to like conduct classes in any way with these kids not being able to, you know, be there and perform?
Yeah, I mean, obviously it all happened. It was just sort of, you know, wing it, let's go, figure it out, do whatever. And so there wasn't really any guidance. There wasn't anything like I had to check off the list of, you know, the kids have to achieve this or that, for last year anyway, the end of it. But what I did was with all my classes, I set up a Google Classroom because Google has a really awesome, a ton of education resources for basically a virtual classroom. And I would post weekly things of here's what I want you to work on this week. Encourage kids to do video, you know, show me what you did this week, you know, should play through this exercise or whatever. And I got quite a few kids that did that. And especially for the middle school groups too, there are, in the books we work out of, there are duet lines. So I'd post videos of myself playing each half of the duet separately and then say, just, you know, tell the kids, play along with me. And just stuff like that. And I actually wrote a piece for my high schoolers that only used things I knew they had at home. The idea was I wrote the piece, I sent them a click track, and said, you guys are, you know, you're playing this, you're playing that, and record yourself a video to the click track, send it to me, and I'll mix them all together, and we'll have this cool, you know, social distancing piece of music. One person sent their part back to me. Everyone else did nothing. So, which is basically to say that, like, I think a lot of kids kind of got overwhelmed with just keeping up with their core classes in a really weird and sudden format, and there was just no real way to like connect the way we wanted to, which is a bummer.
You have a very charitable reading on these kids. I mean, it was like these lazy motherfuckers.
I mean, I know that was part of it. I'm trying to be charitable, like you said, because I like the kids. I don't want to like get mad again. But the whole thing was weird because we all at the same time, you know, everyone went through, you know, varying levels of what they were bummed out about. Obviously, lots of people died. That's like the worst obvious thing. I mean, it was such a bad situation. But, you know, we missed out on a lot of year-end performances, and it was all really sad. So I was trying to do something to get the kids to have you know, a final thing we could do together. So then at the middle school, I think I had a bit more response in terms of the kids doing the weekly assignments and sending me some videos and all that. But it's tough, man.
Well, it seems to me like you're both in very well educated. You're really good at what you do, and you seem to enjoy teaching these children. This is all to say that you are probably what we would imagine is a very good teacher. Is that correct?
Well, thank you. Maybe. I don't know.
Well, I mean, my question for you here is, how do you feel about going back into a classroom starting in a couple of weeks here?
Not good. Not good at all.
Now, I've heard that teachers that aren't on board with getting back into a classroom here in 2 weeks, give or take, are in fact lazy and bad. How do you react to those accusations?
Suck it. Suck it. Shut up. Suck it.
What is the plan? Like, is Oklahoma going to basically say you got to go back in?
Man, yeah. I mean, the thing is, there's just that's been so frustrating this whole time is that there is just no plan. It is every single district on their own trying to do what they think is best. The State Department here, as far as I know, like, I think they had some guidelines of, you know, try this, try to make sure kids learn this there, but there is no plan that was like, okay, here's what we do. There's nothing. So it's every single district was just kind of left to figure out what they do. And then of course, like our governing body in the state of all the extracurricular activities, like all this, like the governing body that controls all the sports, music, drama, all those competitions, basically anything that would, you know, be between the schools. They said, like, just do whatever you want, everybody, like, it's cool. Which means that if one, you know, no school is going to call off their football season if it's not called off for the whole state. And so because of that, if football's in, or, you know, if your sports are generally in and your extra activities are in, then no school is going to just totally call off in classroom learning. I think there's probably some variation around the state for what's, and around the country for sure too, about, like, you know, a mix of virtual stuff and a mix of in classroom stuff. I know Texas, Dallas area, I saw, like, they're doing no in classroom stuff until through September 7th, I think it is. And then they'll reassess.
They push back between 3 and 6 weeks for a lot of districts around here to basically, I guess, buy some more time to figure out what the fuck they're actually going to do.
Yeah. And the thing is, like, there is 100% a way to do this right. Like my specific program is the band program. Like, it's no matter what we do, it's going to, you know, with that kind of a mixed online to in-person thing, it's always going to be, my program is going to suffer. But also dead kids would make my program suffer, or a dead me would make my program suffer. Like, it's just like, I will sacrifice my program's progress for a year or two if it means, like, okay, we're going to do this right. And there is a way to do it right, but our entire society and structure is just, there's no way it's going to support it. Like, you know, a thing like, okay, half the school is in Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday closed, the school is cleaned, other half of the school is in Thursday, Friday, or something like that. That would be really hard, a monumentally difficult task. But if from the get-go that was part of a plan with a lot of structure, then maybe. But then, of course, like, that will not happen in our, in American society. I mean, like, that's, it was hard enough. I mean, it was just devastating enough to think about when we were closed down for so much of the spring, how many kids just didn't eat for a long time, and how many kids who deal with abuse at home had that just compounded because they were at home the whole time. And, you know, reopening and getting back to normal, like, for those kids and for those scenarios is like, yes, we want that. But, like, how do you weigh that against kids and teachers just dying? Like, it's going to happen. And there's no plan for that, too. Like, if you get sick, do you have to take your personal leave to do that? Do you have to take your own sick leave, but you got it at work? Like, is there workers' compensation that you could tap into? I mean, geez, man, I don't know. Like I said, there's just no plan.
So in your mind, what could we do to prevent a whole slew of dead folks and solve this outright?
Topple capitalism.
Mm-hmm.
And if we, well, ideally we wouldn't have kids who can only eat at school, or we wouldn't have kids that, like, or there'd be a better societal structure to where the kids who are getting abused, like the abusers, because, you know, obviously, I mean, we're going to get into so many topics here, but that's a cycle, right? I mean, like, people who abuse their kids or are the guardians of kids in whatever parent foster system, whatever it may be, you know, like, they are abusing because there are things in their life that just, for whatever reason, aren't the right, you know, obviously it's a long cycle of stuff that, that you can, I don't know, I'm going to spin off on that tangent, but, I mean, I don't know. Like, I think the biggest efforts and funding should be making sure that there is internet access everywhere, and that kids can have devices to access online stuff. And just ideally, we'd stay at home and or do a kind of a mix of things. Like, you can really make sure that the building is clean. Between these groups of kids coming in and the groups are lessened. Like I said, for my personal program, like, that would really hurt us when you're starting beginners and they're mixing, like my beginning sixth grade class would suffer from that because we're mixing outside and inside school, and it's going to be really hard to keep that progress. But I just, like, that's not important. Like, the important thing is obviously safety. And some kind of mix of that would be ideal, but there's so many things about the structure of our country that make that not feasible, and it just sucks. Like, there's not a good idea that with the way things are now we could do.
I just thinking about all of the logistics that are involved in kids in school and working adults and, you know, poverty, everything entwined between, like, it just makes an impossible scenario. And mm-hmm. It seems like if we could just pay everybody to stay home for a while, like, that would probably do a lot of good. And again, that would absolutely bring this economy to its knees. So I'm in favor of it, of course, but that could also bring some complications outside of it as well. It seems like we've really constructed the most precarious system we can. And looks like we might be watching it fall apart.
Yeah, and that was a, you know, once things are really settling in, that was a big point of a lot of articles and media out there. Like, it just exposed the unsustainability of everything we do in America. And and we're just going to live with that. Like, that's just, like, you know, every state got some emergency funding, federal funding for education. I have zero idea what that's going to actually do for us, and I don't know. But like, a certain amount of it, in Oklahoma anyway, was totally at the governor's discretion, and our governor is a massive idiot.
What's your governor's name?
Kevin Stitt.
Stitt?
stit.
And he just tested positive for COVID.
He sure did. The first governor in the country to test positive for COVID.
Oh, who could have predicted?
I hope it's really bad. I mean, like, and the guy has like 5 or 7 kids. He had way too many kids. It's disgusting. And he's just, you know, at the beginning of it, he was constantly seen out without a mask and just totally downplaying everything, of course. But anyway, he's got, he had $40 million at his discretion out of the bigger chunk that was fully given to Oklahoma. And, a whole lot of that he put towards online initiatives and private schools.
That's where this fucking thing is getting me.
I get the online initiatives. I get that's like, okay, we want to make it easier for quality content, because usually, obviously, if it's like a online package system for curriculum, you have to pay for it, of course. So it's good that some of that stuff can be covered, but it's all going towards this like school choice type setting where you get your, you know, charter schools and your private schools get favored, and inevitably there is zero way around that money not coming out of public schools. And it's just, public schools serve over 90% of the kids in Oklahoma, and it got less than 50% of his discretionary funding. And if you're going to push online stuff, but you have zero initiatives for, you know, rural broadband or like one-on-one devices for kids to have, like, what good is an online initiative and to have all this online content paid for if thousands of kids literally can't access it?
That brings another, like, brings the divide right to the surface. Like, if you're impoverished, like, you just don't, you lose. You can't get what you need. And I guess the charter school shit gets me more than anything, because it seems like among a certain type of oligarchical freak, like, a goal of that project for years has been getting rid of public schooling, which, for all of its flaws, serves most of, like, everybody. Like, it serves everybody, regardless of how much money you make. And trying to take that away just seems like another way of just destroying people that are already living in precarity.
Yeah. Oh, I mean, it makes zero sense. I mean, like, the whole vouchers program where, like, public education money gets diverted so that kids can have these, you know, private school or charter school vouchers, which is basically them, you know, like a scholarship. Like, there's just no, well, first of all, it comes out of public education money, and their idea is that, well, the kid is out of public education, so you don't need that funding for that kid. But if the kid comes back to public education, which happens a lot, the money doesn't come back. Like, it just, it got taken out, and then that's it. It's a use it or lose it thing, kind of. And, man, the people in charge, obviously Betsy DeVos, is just a living, breathing train wreck of a human.
Just the worst possible person to have if you wanted a functional public school system.
Good Lord, she is a mess. Like, she, I don't even need to expand on it, because she is just, she's the worst person.
I mean, I think she has competition with her brother being the worst person, like an actual blood money mercenary leader. But they're both just the worst people on earth. I wish them nothing but extra doses of COVID.
Yeah. And those people too, like, when she first got appointed, there's this meme that was going around, like, imagine being Betsy DeVos. You have billions of dollars. You can buy an island and not see another person outside of the people you want to see for the rest of your life. But you choose to, like, just be ridiculed in public so that poor kids can't get education.
Yeah, it is some kind of, like, psychosis that I don't follow, because it seems to me, if you have all of your needs met, everything you could possibly ever want, spending your time, money, effort to deny education to poor children as being your reason to exist is just beyond monstrous. I can't really fathom it.
Yeah, it's awful. And that's why, you know, there was no plan. I mean, we love in this country to just say states' rights, and you know, let's let the states handle it. We don't want government overreach. And then you let the states handle it, and they monumentally screw it up every time. Well, some do, some don't, worse than others. But I mean, there was really for anything too. There's just no plan. And if Betsy DeVos is the one that's supposed to come up with a plan for education to happen well, good Lord, what have we done to put ourselves in that situation?
So I've seen threats that schools would lose funding if they didn't have butts and seats. Is mm-hmm. that something that you're seeing in Oklahoma?
I mean, I can't really say what the specifics of that might look like for us. Like, you know, because I don't, obviously I'm not in the position where I'm dealing with, you know, overall big picture stuff like that. And we haven't, that sounds like just another dumb threat that, you know, okay, whatever, you have your tweet and calm down for the day. But I don't think so right now, but we're going back to school anyway. So I don't know. I mean, yeah, we are in my district, and I think a lot of districts around here too, we are requiring masks like from pre-K through 12th grade. I mean, yeah.
Well, I mean, do you have a personal plan for what you're going to do if, you know, you get the call to go in and, I don't know, God forbid you get sick or one of your kids get sick?
Nope. I mean, it's just going to be, well, I think teachers are going to have to do masks and face shields, which is going to be clunky and annoying, but sure, I'll do it. Yeah. I mean, like, I have no problem with that. And it's just there's no guidance for anything other than let's be careful and hope nothing happens. But the second something happens, there is no guidance. Like, actually, my wife, she works in admin in a different school district than me. And geez, she's been doing like, she has not stopped working every day since it's all been happening. She's in Zoom meetings all the time. And hearing her again, it's like they're, I'm listening to her with her, you know, administration and colleagues just come up with a plan on their own because there's no other plan that given to them. And since we both work in two districts, and there's a lot of teachers who are married to educators in some format, and like, if I get it, she's in the house with me, clearly exposed to it. Can she go to work? Like, or if she gets it, can I go to work because I'm exposed? Like, or if, you know, a kid in a grade, or if a kid gets it and their younger sibling is in another grade, do they have to shut down both grade levels or both classrooms that they're in?
Right.
And there's no guidance. So no idea. Basically, I'm going to just be really careful. I actually got moved to a new room this year, which is outside from the school. Like, I'm in a portable, and it's huge, which is nice. And I think it's kind of isolated, which is good too. So I'm just going to try and keep it like as clean as I can. Spray stuff all the time. Wear my mask. Kids are going to wear their masks, and we'll see.
Well, I got to tell you, it seems like this is a pretty poor system overall.
You could say that, yeah. Also, I'm looking forward to when some kid comes in and says, my dad tells me I don't have to, whatever. Because we do live in a pretty rural, I teach in a really rural district, and it is guns, God, and football for a lot of those parents. And I think the kids are a little more like progressively minded. Like, the kids are kind of like, yeah, my parents are dumb. I'm not really like that, which is great. But we still have kids that are, you know, we'll see.
Well, shit. Jordan, do you have a plan for higher education?
I mean, I've been working from home since March, and the plan right now is to keep working from home until we tell you, and rumor has it that it's going to be for the rest of the year. Like, we'll see. I'm living in a state where things are actually comparatively pretty okay. So, you know, we might be going back, and it's not as quite a horror show as some other people.
That's nice.
Yeah, it seems like it's probably a little bit easier to do this with college-age adults who theoretically can figure out, you know, how to get a computer and work a webcam. It seems like it's really tough with young people.
Yeah. And it's you know, how many kids don't have that access or exactly. Don't have a device or whatever. It's impossible, man.
Well, fuck. I mean, I know that back a couple of years ago, Oklahoma teachers went on a walkout and they won some pretty much needed concessions.
Yeah.
In the event where things go to hell, do you think there might be some collective action?
I really hope so. I know there's been talk of it. And I do. And I think the teachers in our district, especially our union, teacher union leaders in our district, and our teacher union leader in Oklahoma is great. And I think they would recognize when it's the time to basically send out the call, like, let's do this. And I think, you know, teachers in general tend to be, we're all in it, you know, we got our teachers union. Like, I think we're especially after the couple years ago, I think we'll be ready to like do that if need be. So I think that's good. And, you know, I've been going to a ton of protests around here and I think we can organize pretty well. And I've always felt safe at the protests too. Like everyone's wearing masks. Like no one's getting, you know, bunched up needlessly. I know around the country where the protests are huge, hasn't really been, you can't really avoid the social distancing breaking, but yeah.
I guess, I have gone to a couple myself. I'm not really afraid of the people around me. I'm mostly afraid of the guys that are like, you know, launching tear gas at skulls.
Yeah, good Lord. I mean, we've had teenagers and early kids in early 20s. I know it's happening everywhere too, but quite a few were arrested here that got charged with terrorism.
Jesus,
like straight
Christ.
Up terrorism charges, because the Oklahoma DA or whatever, the, you know, guy in charge of all that, like they just went straight for it. Because, and I know I was watching a documentary about one of them that got arrested. He was arrested for being in the Oklahoma City Police Department lobby after they invited him in. He and like two or three people with him were arrested for being in the lobby because it is shut down for COVID, but they invited them in because someone else got arrested. They followed in to like support and they said, no, you stay out there. Eventually they let them come in and sit down and talk to them and then arrested them while they're sitting there for being in there.
That's real pig shit, man.
Yeah, it's awful, man. And I know all that, like that group that really got targeted for that was like straight up sit-ins at the police department. They're not outside wrecking stuff. Like they sit in, they would just sit there, or they got permission to do a mural on the street, and like then they got arrested and charged with terrorism.
I'm saying it's unbelievable. It's totally believable. It sucks, is yeah. All.
Yep.
It seems like you can't really win. You can be peaceful and they might still wreck you for no reason. Then you you could get black bagged for who knows? Who knows why?
Yeah.
It's a little depressing, man.
Good times.
Jordan, is there anything that you wanted to add on here?
Education good, school bad.
In a roundabout way, I think you're right. I think you're right on that one.
I think it's, we need better education. We need better resources for the educators. I think it's public school can be very difficult for those in attendance, for those trying to teach, for those even trying to administrate. And things are made a lot worse when the people at the very top are dumb as hell and don't care about you.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep. Also, I'll add police bad.
Yeah, but not so good. Not so good, I gotta say, on that one.
Metal, sometimes good?
Yeah, sometimes, but like...
Sometimes.
I don't know, sometimes, you know, somebody from a, you know, well-known and respected band will go out himself being a huge transphobe,
good Lord.
Firing a band member, sending texts worrying about his legacy of having, you think about my legacy, I can't have a trans person in the band,
right?
My legacy
over, and like, it's going to be ruined over your decision, because that's a decision. You just like decide one day, eh, I'm going to do this.
Goddamn.
What a giant diaper.
what was the name that you had for him?
Proscriptor McDiaper.
I like it.
Like, that is it, man. That's who you are now.
I think, you know, if there was a way that folks wanted to support their local public school teachers, you have any advice for them?
Man, I don't even know. I mean, I know there's a lot of things, like, right now we're looking for donations for no-touch thermometers. So, I mean, I would imagine districts around the country are going to be needing that. So, donating masks, donating, and I think even our district has a fund for, like, if you just donate to this fund, the district will buy the thermometer, so you don't have to, like, buy it yourself and send it to them or anything. So, I'm sure there's districts anywhere around where anyone is listening that could use something like that. But in the big picture, man, like, just do everything you can to topple capitalism.
Seems like that's the only way we're getting out of this one.
Yeah.
Well, I figure we got a lot of things for folks to think about from this show. So let's give them a little bit of mood music. What's something that you want to play on this one?
Man. Well, the thing I'm most excited about right now, I think, is the new Atramentus album coming up. It's this funeral doom project with a bunch of those Canadian wizards, like Phil Tugas.
So it's like funeral doom played by like technical prog dudes.
Yeah, pretty much.
It's a really polite funeral doom. They say sorry when they're burying you in your feelings and the fog of inevitability.
Yeah, and just shredding these sweet sweeps, but really slow. No, I'm kidding. But it's awesome, and I would love to say play that, because I'm so excited for that album. It has like probably the best cover art of anything ever. Since the songs are like 100 hours long, they just released these little like 2-minute snippets on YouTube, so probably not a good option. I'd say throw on some Piron, man. Like, that's, I love that new album, and it's angry at the system. I love those Piron guys, and it's real mad.
All right, we can do that.
Yeah,
we're gonna listen to some sexy music now.
Yeah.
Well, Josh, thank you so much for joining us today and sharing tales from the front lines.
Where can people find your music?
Discordia.bandcamp.com. Check out, I mean, we're on Facebook. You know, we've got the Discordia. There's an H after the C in Discordia, so look up the right one. But we'll be, like, this weekend, we'll be posting all kinds of stuff about album progress, and over the next month or so as we're recording it. Thanks for having me on. This stuff is all super depressing and a bummer to say, but it's kind of nice to, you know, just vent and get it out, so I appreciate it. Had fun.
And be on the lookout for new Discordia music. Thanks for listening to us, everybody, and hey, we'll talk to you next time.
You're listening to 66.6 FM, Radio TOVH, The Flush.